Hello, everybody. This is Flirties and Films. This week, we're talking about Ocean's 11.
Hit the music. I got Girl Scout cookies in my mouth.
My name is Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This week, we're talking about the 2001 film Ocean's 11. Michael, tell the folks what it's about.
I have a little summary description here of the film, and I'll read it now. Danny Ocean and his 10, add them up, accomplices plan to rob 3 Las Vegas casinos simultaneously.
Am I a fucking idiot? I did not realize he was robbing 3 casinos at the same time.
I mean, it's been a while since we watched the movie. If we were post watching the movie, you'd be like, oh, I remember the 3.
I hope so, because I feel like now that you're saying that, there was like the Bellagio pan, MGM pan or whatever, but you know, they just rob one vault. So
I think Monica's dad goes 3 casinos at once bang, in the film. So you probably would remember.
Now that you're saying it, boing, that's ringing a bell.
A lot of sound effects in the film. Well, can you go first?
Have you seen this film before?
Yes. Don't really remember ever watching it before, but I have seen it. And there's probably a good reason why I don't remember it, because I saw it this time. We saw it like a few weeks ago. And I did not particularly care for it. But I'll keep it short because we'll talk about it more.
This was my pick because I was like, I needed a little palate cleanser for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I thought something fun and enjoyable. But yeah, I have some surprising thoughts on it. But why don't we learn a little more about it? Why don't we see some backgrounds?
However, some really cool facts? We do that?
Michael, I've got it. Check your watch.
Oh, look at that. It is BAM!
Time for Sam, the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us how this got made and some cool facts and who is the sexiest
She's gonna
of the 11.
She's going to read the entire script. She's going to give us all the actors' bios. She's going to read their IMDb's to us. Let's go.
Spoiler, Elliot Gould. Go on.
Fade in on a black screen. Just kidding.
I'm absorbed.
So obviously this film is based on the 1960 film by the same name, which starred the Rat Pack, which was like Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., etc. So what's interesting about this film that I have never seen, the 1960s version, is that apparently it's famously not good. What's just like why it's kind of continued on in pop culture lore is because it was the first movie where the Rat Pack all appeared together. So it's kind of just like this famous film that's out there that people are like, oh, I know it, but like no one's ever seen it. Actually, apparently Julia Roberts fell asleep twice trying to watch it. So if that just gives you
like
any idea
for this movie, why are they called the Rat Pack?
Oh my god, I was actually gonna look that up and then I didn't. Now I feel very stupid. I'm going to come back to you.
Okay.
That's going to be a later segment.
Yeah, just drop it in.
Yeah, for sure. So anyways, Steven Soderbergh is a director, and he had just come off of some big wins, and he's like, I want to make a movie. I like this 1960s film. Let's get a bunch of big name stars and remake it, except for let's actually make it into a good movie. So, as he put it, when I saw Ocean's 11, when I say Ocean 11 is a throwback to an earlier period in cinema, I mean that the movie is never mean, it's never gratuitous, nobody is killed, nobody is humiliated for no reason, or is the butt of a joke.
Gratuitous?
Yeah, that's the word. It's probably the least threatening film I've ever made in a way. So really, he was kind of looking for like this lighthearted comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he immediately went to get the big cast. His first pick for Danny Oceans was Bruce Willis. He turned it down, though, because of scheduling conflicts. And then he found his next lead in George Clooney. They brought in Brad Pitt, and they wanted, you know, a strong female to play opposite these kind of two really great men. So they were interested in Julia Roberts because the director had just worked with her on Aaron Brockovich. So George Clooney, in his smart-assery way, sent the script to her along with a $20 bill. This is because it had just been announced in the news that she was the highest paid actress at $20 million per picture. So he sent her the script with a $20 bill and a note that said, "I hear you're getting $20 a picture now." So
that's cute joke.
Just so we know, the Rat Pack is a term that we used to refer to a group of friends in New York, totally unrelated. And then they were the Frank Sinatra and all that group. They used to be called the Klan, and people thought it sounded too much like Ku Klux Klan. So then
sure,
they adopted
Rat Pack. Sure,
because
they both have Klan in them.
I mean, would you like your group of friends to be referred to as the Klan?
Yeah, no, my friends were the Nazi boys, but we found out there's some bad connections.
So some other names that were offered to be in this film but couldn't make it. So Luke and Owen Wilson were offered the role of the two brothers, but they had to drop out, along with actually Danny Glover, who was going to be offered the role for the movie The Royal Tandem. They all were in that instead. Oh. So those were some other ones. And then the other one I'd like to mention is that Wahlberg actually signed on but then pulled out of the film to be in Planet of the Apes. He was actually going to play Matt Damon's role. However, unlike everyone else, he seems to be kind of an asshole about it. Shockingly, Marky Mark's an asshole. But this is one of his quotes from an interview. "People tell George Clooney, it's great, and we all know it sucked. I made two bad movies instead, Planet of the Apes and The Truth About Charlie, but doing that was better than sitting with Brad Pitt and George telling the press how great everyone is. We were in Europe, George was funny, and we had some wine." That's not for me.
He sounds so jealous.
Oh, that's how I would be. I didn't even want to be in that goddamn movie.
Movies what, suck. I'm going to go read a book.
Try it sometime.
The other member I kind of want to mention, because obviously this was a cast just full of these really incredible and legendary actors of generations, too. Like, you had a good range of different, you had like Carl Reiner and stuff like that. But the one I want to mention is actually Cherubin Quinn, who played the acrobat, the Amazing Yen. He actually was a professional acrobat and contortionist, and they saw his work and they asked him to be in this film. He had to have an interpreter because he didn't speak English, so they would help him out with telling him what to do for the scenes. This is the only films he did. He did the two sequels as well, but other than that, he's never done acting. So,
because he didn't want to, or he didn't get roles?
I just don't think he wanted to. I thought he was like, this sounds like fun, and then just kind of was like, I'm good.
Nice.
So because you have to imagine, a film with this caliber of actors must be very expensive just on the salaries alone. Apparently, most of the cast actually took a huge cut from their usual salaries just to get the film to an acceptable budget. So according to Clooney, "We were going to have a terrific cast, everyone working below rate. We said, if you all get paid, we can't make the movie. So why don't we just take a big chunk of the back end, work cheap, and see if there's any money at the end."
Nice.
Probably paid off for him.
Probably. So filming began. One of the first scenes where we meet Rusty, a.k.a. Brad Pitt. He's teaching a room of teen idols to play poker. And actually, all the people in the room were teen idols. There was Holly Marie Combs of Charmed, Topher Grace of The 70s Show, Joshua Jackson of Dawson's Creek, Barry Watson of Seventh Heaven, and Shane West of Once and Again.
What's Once and Again? Is that a TV show?
I don't know.
I only know that guy
would
from that,
be
that Mandy Moore movie.
Yeah, I was going to say I only know him from A Walk to Remember, too.
Sorry, it made it sound like there was a sequel to A Walk to Remember, and that can't be right.
Run to Remember.
So obviously, you know, they had this script, which is this heist of a casino, and notoriously casinos just aren't easy to work with because they, you know, their business is on the floor. So if you're filming on the floor, they can't have their business. So they often make film companies shoot at very odd hours to kind of limit the amount of access. So they're kind of nervous going into working on this film. But it turns out that the owner of the Bellagio was a friend of the film company. And so the Bellagio kind of just let them take over. In fact, at one point they had 25 to 30% of the whole casino floor. So
there's no sunlight in the casino from what I understand. So they could have shot at any time. They could have shot like 4 in the morning.
Which is normally what they do. They normally make them shoot between midnight and 6 a.m. But they just kind of gave them full access. So according to one of the producers, you have to understand that we completely disrupted their operation. We closed their valet parking for 3 to 4 days, which meant their clients, including the high rollers, had to check into the hotel through the concrete self-parking garage. They let us turn off their fountains and dancing waters in the lake. We closed the conservatory and the botanical gardens. We closed down the reception area from its famous glass sculpture. And we even took over the high-rolling gaming room at one point.
Hey, can anyone else hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Is what? It better now?
Yes. Okay, great.
I didn't hear it.
You didn't hear a like a little
hissing. All good?
Yes. Sorry. Gone now.
Yep. You're all good. Sorry, I'm just going back to my notes because I went back to make sure. So even the Bellagio let the crew tap into their security system to kind of get an idea of what it looked like so that they could make realistic security kind of setups. The cast actually lived in the Bellagio while filming. They each had like a villa, of course, because they did. Mm-hmm. And then during off hours, they would just go gambling together. So there is often a disagreement among the cast over who was the big winner of it, but it was known that Clooney was the consistent loser. In fact, he lost 25 hands of blackjack in a row.
And
so
Mark Wahlberg just thinks gambling is stupid, so he's glad he wasn't there.
Yeah, he's really happy. You know, he doesn't eat it.
It's not healthy.
He doesn't eat it. Yeah.
He thinks Vegas is tacky, frankly.
Yeah, a little gaudy.
He wants to go somewhere real.
So one of the famous things about this film is that every time you see Brad Pitt's character, he is eating something. This was actually Brad Pitt's idea. His thought process was that Rusty is constantly moving and doing things throughout the day that he doesn't have time to sit down and eat. So he's just constantly munching, though Pitt did say that's kind of like his own habits, that he's a big grazer. So it kind of worked in him that way. However, this only really backfired in one scene when Julia Roberts is entered. He was eating shrimp, and to get the timing right, he actually ended up eating over 40 shrimp during that one day. So
I thought that was a thing Brad Pitt did in several movies, but I like the idea that he brings it fresh every movie. It's like, I got an idea for this. You're gonna, it's different.
Wait,
it's
I'm
different.
Like your mental alter ego. I probably eat a lot.
So this film, even though it, besides the name and the main character's name, it really has no ties to the 1960 version of this film. Two of the actors from the original film do make cameos in the boxing match scene. So just fun fact about that. Don Cheadle is not credited for this film at all. He demanded above the title billing. So up there with Clooney, Damon, Pitt, and Roberts. And when they said no, he said, well, then just don't put me in the film at all credited. So he is not listed as a character in this film.
What a move.
He would get top billing for the following two sequels.
Nice.
This film would premiere and reach a gross of $450 million.
Jesus.
And was the fifth highest grossing film of 2001.
Wow.
We got to know what was number one. Harry Potter.
Thank you for asking. It was Harry Potter.
Yeah, I just knew that.
Nice. Number one was Harry Potter. It was actually a good year. I was surprised.
Shrek?
Harry Potter was number one. Lord of the Rings was number two. Monsters, Inc., Shrek, Ocean's 11, Pearl Harbor, Mummy Returns, Jurassic Park 3, Planet of the Apes, and Hannibal.
All right.
And my final thing for you guys today, your animal fact of the week, which today we're actually going to the insect world. Mm. What is the average lifespan of a periodical cicada?
I don't know what that animal is.
Well, so they're asleep for 17 years. And then I don't know.
34 it years. It is
13 to 17 years. They have one of the longest lifespans because they actually, as eggs, go down into the earth and they live off of fluids from roots. And then they know to either come up at 13 or 17 years.
I'm not going to lie, it's going to be hard for me to retain this information because I do not know the animal that we're talking about. And that was Bam.
Time for Sam. Nobody's been shutting up about the cicadas because they like woke up recently or whatever. Not around here, though. Maybe that's why.
So I got to be like watching the news or whatever to know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, not going to do that.
Should we see what the critics had to say about this film?
I think we ought to.
Unless you want to talk about cicadas some more.
No, I got nothing to say.
All right. I'll start from Joshua Rothkopf of In These Times. As we live and breathe, Steven Soderbergh is making the best kid stuff for adults since Howard Hawks put Cary Grant a sombrero. It's no small achievement. I do not know what that reference is.
You guys are putting some ends in Soderbergh's name.
Am I? Sorry.
I am pissed.
Soderbergh.
Yeah.
So sorry.
I am.
What else has he done? Is he like a guy?
Yeah, he did a movie with Daniel Craig recently where they robbed NASCAR and it's just Ocean's 11 but NASCAR.
He was actually nominated before this film for 2 Academy Awards in the same day or same year.
Oh, then never mind.
And the other was some other Julia Roberts film?
The one was Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I don't remember the name of, but that's the one he won for.
Gotcha. All right, so this next review is by an Amazon reviewer, which is a website where you can buy stuff. And this review goes like this. What can I say? Julia Roberts is an unattractive lady and terrible actress. That's how it starts. George Clooney does nothing for me either. Andy Garcia should have picked a better role.
So I think the thesis, if I had to pick out of that review, is this reviewer wants to do Andy Garcia. Like, Andy Garcia does it for this reviewer.
What's Andy doing?
What is Andy doing? Like, George, Julia Roberts. Andy Garcia could have picked something better. Andy. This from Peter Rayner of the New York Magazine. It can at times be forgettable in a fun way, especially when its funniest performers are caught in Soderbergh's spinning crosshairs.
Who is that by? Peter Rayner?
Yep.
Okay, this next one is by Eden, who writes for Amazon Reviews. I tried to watch this movie, but after the first seconds of hearing Clooney's voice, I got sleepy. My eyes blurred at the screen and everything got dark. Sipifies. Oops, sorry. I'm having a flashback to the moment and forgot how to type. Very clever. I didn't see this movie and don't know if I ever will. All right. So don't bother with my opinion. It is just one of many.
What? Interesting confidence.
I like that. Hey, this is just me. This is my
opinion. That's just how I feel. Don't worry about it.
One star. Just don't mind this.
This is from friend of the pod, Peter Bradshaw, writer for The Guardian.
Bring me Peter
Bradshaw. The dross of Frank Sinatra's home movie Vanity Project has been transformed into a ridiculously enjoyable caper directed with the brio by Steven Soderbergh, who brings off the combination of action and tongue-in-cheek comedy, which eluded the chairman of the board.
You could tell he's British because he used the word dross.
Oh, I do like that word. I'm going to try to use it and then use it incorrectly and be really embarrassed.
All right. This is the challenge. Both of us will try to use dross naturally in this podcast episode. The first one wins. Okay. We'll continue. Okay. God, this next review is by Mike H., who writes for Amazon. God, this is a dumb movie. Read the book if there is one. The casino owner seemed enjoyably bad for the first third. And then
Hot Andy Garcia.
Okay, you should have been in more. And then just stupid. I can't remember any of the other characters. There were a lot. There were 11.
Yeah.
Julia, I guess. is how it ends.
All right. So we're going to do a little, I'm going to do a brief Colleen summary. Michael, jump in whenever.
Sure.
It's going to be brief because I'm not going to go into the details of the heist, which is the majority of the
film. We think this will be a short episode overall.
So the film it stars Danny Ocean. Get it?
I don't get it.
It's Ocean's 11.
Oh, I mean, they named the movie after the guy in the movie. That's not wordplay.
I didn't say it was wordplay.
You said get it.
You're right. That was a dross
comment. We watched Schindler's List. They go, that's Oscar Schindler. And you're like, huh? That's him. Get it?
Do you hear my bit?
No, I just ignored it. Well, I want to know what your bit is.
Oh, I just said, yeah, you're right. And then that was a dross comment of mine.
God damn it. You won already.
So anyway.
Did you use that right?
Who cares? So right. Danny Ocean just got out of prison. He just got out of prison. He meets up with his best friend in the whole world, whose name is Rusty Ryan. Which, what a name.
What a name.
That's played by Brad Pitt. So they decide they're just going to do a heist, steal loads of money for fun. So they go up to meet with their friend, Ruben Tishkoff, Monica's dad from Friends, who agrees to finance the whole thing. Well, what whole thing? They're going to rob 3 Vegas casinos, which is apparently very hard to do, during a boxing match. So there's more money than normal. The casinos are run by Terry Benedict, played by Andy Garcia.
So nice.
Who just happens to be dating Danny's ex-wife, Julia Roberts, whose name I did not write down. But it's Julia Roberts. All right. So that's 3 people. But we got to get up there in numbers, right?
Yeah, we got a lot more characters.
So here's the other 8. We got Linus.
Why are there 11? Were there 11 people in the Rat Pack?
Yes, I guess. In the film. I don't know. So we got Linus, played by Matt Damon, who's kind of a dork and a pickpocket. And we got Frank, Bernie Mac. He's just like a normal con man, casino worker. Then there's the 2 brother mechanics, Casey Affleck and Scott Kahn.
They couldn't get Ben Affleck. It's disappointing. Right? Yeah.
I mean, his best friend, Matt Damon, was there. But I guess he was a last-minute recast, so that's probably why.
Yeah, probably.
Although you would hope Casey Affleck would also have some pull with Ben Affleck. I don't know why I went to Matt first.
Casey's just like, yeah, I talked to his manager. He couldn't get me through.
Then Saul Bloom, played by Carl Reiner, who's also a con man, but he's super old. Then Basher with Don Cheadle, just doing the worst English accent. I think, like, Don Cheadle's a real actor who could do real things. And it was like a third-rate comedian doing an impression of a Guy Ritchie film.
Yeah, I also think our modern-day sense of humor has evolved, where you can't just do that as a bit.
Oh, you think that was a joke? That his British accent was bad?
No, he didn't do it intentionally bad, but like, oh, if I'm like really, if I have a strong accent, that's funny.
Sure.
I think that was the joke.
Then there's a guy named Livingston Dells. He does surveillance. I only know him as a weird guy from the film Waitress. I think he's probably the least famous, except for The Amazing Yen, the acrobat played by Quinn Chabo. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they do some reconnaissance. They do some cool planning. In the end, there's sometimes you think the plan goes wrong or you think they're getting caught, but nope, you've been tricked and they are very smart and you are dumb. So they get all the money. Danny gets Julia Roberts back for some reason. And then we all learn the real heist along the way was friendship.
I loved that summary. That was so fast.
Yeah.
Here's my first discussion point. Okay. There's a game that I play on the PlayStation called Hitman. And in Hitman, you go to various exotic locations, like casinos, with like a goal. And it's like a sandbox game. You have one mission. You have to take out one of the assassination targets. And you can like plan your heist. And you can like steal the uniform of another, like a guard, and then impersonate a guard. I wish I played this movie instead of watched it. Like, nothing happens in this movie. There's no, like, I don't care about any of the characters. It's just like, I want to play the game of this movie. I don't really want to watch this movie. I don't want to like Hitman. That's why I brought that up.
It sounds to me like the director did do what he wanted. It was to make a completely inoffensive film.
Yeah.
Like, it is just pleasant. It's nice. Everyone's very attractive and cute.
I feel like Oh, I'll cut you off. Go ahead.
No, go on.
I feel like you and I had the same kind of reaction to it, where we watched it and we were thinking like, okay, you know, this is not going to challenge us. It's just fun boys, and they're having fun boy time together, and they're going to steal, whatever. It'll be fun. And then we finished it, and we're like, okay, I guess that is what we got, but wow, that was really weirdly unengaging.
Yeah.
It's like weirdly boring.
I feel like I have a memory of liking this movie, of thinking it was funny, but I think that watching it, it's like, it seems like George Clooney and Brad Pitt are just kind of cute to hang out with, but that does not a movie make, you know? That can't be the sum of it. But that, I think, was the best part, was just them being cute friends together.
Yeah. It's like this movie's lighthearted, but without actually being a comedy. Like, there's not any good jokes. But they're also not interesting to watch. Because, I mean, I feel bad, right? So, three episodes ago, we watched the film Moonstruck.
Yeah.
My takeaway from that movie is like, oh, in very interesting, you know, interesting characters, but I don't know, boring, I kind of thought.
Yeah.
But that movie is way better than this movie. This movie is like way, because like, not only is this movie boring, as in just like not a lot happens. Oh, they plan a heist and then they do the heist. But it's like, it feels vapid to me. Like, I just get no emotion from it.
Which, I'm not against vapid films. I think I knew it was going to be that a little bit. But it's just so nothing. Like, it's aggressively little going on there. So, yeah, here's an example, too. And this might be a whole other discussion point. So, I don't love it in movies when they have a female character who just exists to be a plot point. And it's like, Julia Roberts isn't even that. Like, she's so nothing. She's pretty and classy, and she has some fun tete-a-tete. But, like, she's just there to give Danny Ocean the motivation to just perfectly execute a heist, and then she goes with him for no reason.
I have two counterpoints. One, okay. I feel like your wokeness is silencing my voice and I don't like it. Number two, I feel like they all are just plot points. They all just like exist to be whatever.
Yeah, I know. Well, but then I think I just think maybe all white men should just shut up. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that later, because I have some thoughts about that.
But I just think that calling it plot points would indicate a strong plot. It's just like she was like, I guess we had to have a bigger reason for him to rob these casinos. Like, oh, he's with his ex-wife. And it's like, okay. So what bothers me about it is it's like he goes to this heist. He doesn't learn anything. He doesn't change in any way. To me, it seems quite clear. He is the same person at the beginning of the film as he is at the end of the film, but he's richer. And she's like, I'm going to give this another chance. Surely there's a reason they got divorced. Yeah. But
if you're saying she's bad, I just don't want that to sound like you're giving credit to every other character.
Well, okay. So yeah, that was actually my ultimate point, is that I don't usually like it when they do this in movies, but it's like, I'm kind of okay with it, right? Like, you know, if the movie has something else going on, I'm okay that, you know, John McClane's wife, there isn't much there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's fine. I'm okay that Liam Neeson's daughter, I don't know, she likes horses and singing, I guess, but that's all I need. That's all I need, because I am engaged in something that's happening.
It just occurred to me how funny that is. Like, well, she's a girl, so she just does the girl things.
Ponies and karaoke? Singing.
Yeah, yeah, we got it. No, we don't need women on this. We got it.
Is that enough pony stickers on her travel documents or no? Okay.
It's like the right girl about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Put a music note because she likes singing.
So, yeah, I just, I don't know. There's just, it does, I guess in some ways, it feels a little lazy from the point of, well, okay. So, like, the filmmaking in it is fine. The casino looks pretty. I think probably the first time I saw this in theaters, I was like, ooh, the heist, you know? Boy, he got one over on them. Isn't that fun? And I'm sure that if I actually paid attention to the details of the heist, it probably doesn't totally make sense. But that doesn't bother me. It's just the blandness of the movie that bothers
me. I don't know. It's not like the realism. It's like, why do we... Hold on. So I'm thinking about the movie Die Hard, right? Mm-hmm. It's like... is John McClane a realistic character? Is his plan to rescue everybody realistic? Do you really follow it? It's like, no, it's like there's just a human element where you care about him and you care about his mission. And I just feel like there's no human element to this movie. It feels kind of robotic to me.
Yes, that's a... Well, right, the most human moments are just like, oh, aren't George and Brad cute?
The human moment's like, I bet those actors are fun.
Yes, that is exactly what I mean. Like, I don't feel like George Clooney is actually that upset about losing his ex-wife.
Right, oh, absolutely not.
I don't feel... Well, I mean, I actually will say... that the sexy Andy Garcia was probably doing the best acting in this film.
He's absolutely the best character. Although, like, not evil enough.
Not evil enough, but like, you're like, okay, I get what he's about. He seems upset about losing his money.
Right. We're like, why is he the bad guy? Like, it's his casino, right? He's like the business owner. Like, actually, the thieves are the bad ones, I think.
Yeah, I like your point, though, that maybe they should have made him more of an asshole. Like, they clearly tried to make him an asshole, but like, does he deserve to lose all his money just because he's not very nice sometimes?
Yeah.
I mean, I assume a unscrupulous casino owner is actually a bad person, but the movie did not explain that well enough to me.
We needed him to be Jafar. We needed him to have a snake.
Yes.
And a staff that glowed.
Yeah. But I guess to Sam's quote about the director, they just did not want to make in any way an offensive film. So they didn't want to show him doing anything actually bad. Because that would ruin the tone he was going for.
I guess we could compliment the movie and say that it did have style. You know, it had music.
Well, a lot of movies have music.
This movie had I felt like those songs were... There's a lot of songs. And I feel like they're original songs to the movie.
Yeah. I mean...
This movie could have been animated. It might have made it better.
Well, no, because I wanted to look at cute boys.
All right. Good point. We got a lot of good debate on this podcast.
I don't know. There's like some moments where it's like, oh, this is a cool shot of Vegas. But I also just give so few shits about Las Vegas. I do not find that an interesting place. So I don't really care about all these like kind of loving shots of the Bellagio fountain and stuff.
That's
my own weird bias, but.
Just gaudy nothingness. As Mark Wahlberg would say, it's like, who even cares? I didn't even want to be there.
Yeah, I don't know why what he's talking about with Europe. I think that's Ocean's 12, maybe. Was he maybe going to get cast again in Ocean's 12, so he's just twice bitter?
Yeah, auditioned three times. Like, I didn't want it any of the times.
Zero times. Oh, they're just hanging out.
I did it as a bit. If they would have cast me, I would have laughed.
They're just hanging out at George Clooney's villas playing pranks on each other. I didn't even want to go.
I don't like pranks. I think they're mean. I think they put people down. I want to put people up.
I feel like he would say that in
I mean, Funky Bunch. I mean, they got uplifting songs like that.
Yes. I only know the one, but sure.
But that's about like not doing drugs is great, right?
Yeah, it's whack.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
The film Ocean's 11.
Do you have any more discussion points?
Here's another discussion point. I saw the movie Ocean's 8, the Lady remake. Mm-hmm. And I thought when I saw that, I'm like, well, this is kind of nothing. You know what? Upon further reflection, a pretty faithful addition to the Ocean's canon. I don't know. Was it in the same universe? I already forgot because it was pretty forgettable. But you know what? It was a lot of cool lady actors I liked, and they were cute, and it was pretty, and it was in New York, which is prettier than Las Vegas. And maybe I shouldn't have been so harsh on what was just a good homage to the Ocean's universe.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of maybe what would have made it better, but my suggestions are all really just like more jokes. You know, it's a spy movie where they're doing a heist, and I guess do more heist things, but I guess they did a couple.
Yeah, I think a lot of people liked Ocean's 13 because it was the funniest of them, but I cannot remember any jokes other than Al Pacino's acting. And one time they're in a hotel room watching Oprah like change someone's life, and then they start crying a little bit, and it's very cute.
That's very funny. Were they men?
Men.
That's crazy because they're watching Oprah.
I know, right? I don't know. It was just them being cute. You know, it wasn't a joke. It's just them being kind of charming.
This whole movie, though, just like, oh, that's cute.
Right. So maybe there are actual jokes in Ocean's 13, but that's all I remember.
All right. Well, I feel like we're winded down.
We wound down.
We wound down this whole... Yeah, we from the minute one. How about we give our brother John a call?
Let's do it.
That we call Bro Call.
Bring, bring. Bring, bring.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello. Right. Hey, John, have you seen the film Ocean's 11?
Yeah, and I only caught the last little bit of your conversation, and apparently I like it dramatically better than both of you, because I find the movie, honestly, I find any heist movie that has at least a base amount of logic to it, very enjoyable. And I found this movie very enjoyable, both from the heist standpoint and from their buddy-buddy standpoint. I particularly enjoy Andy Garcia. I think he's amazing. particularly considering he's the quote-unquote bad guy, but he's the victim in the whole story. Absolutely. He did literally nothing wrong through the whole movie.
Sexy, sexy victim, Andy Garcia.
Yes, a sexy, very, very attractive victim. Like, even his bad part where he's like tells George Clooney, like, oh, I'll give you test back for all the money. Like, come on!
I do have to ask, because I'm just curious. What is your top heist movie?
Ooh, good question, Ooh, Michael.
That is a good question. I wish you would give me a lead up to this.
Shoot, sorry.
Ah, crap.
I can't even think of one. That's why I asked.
Yeah, right?
I don't even know it as a genre.
Oh, now I got to think about this. I'm Googling it, literally.
I totally just Googled heist movies, and I haven't seen any of these.
Yeah, right? All these movies, Fast and the Furious, that's kind of funny.
There's one called The Italian Job.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. That's a good one. Michelle loves that movie.
Oh, I like Now You See Me because I like the YouTube videos about how silly their magic
is. I love the idea of the movie. I want to see it.
And of course, the very best joke about it is it's the dumbest thing ever that the sequel wasn't called Now You Don't.
That's pretty good. I like how Point Break is on here. So yeah, the moral of the story is I like this movie. I like the heist aspect of it.
So maybe you don't like heist movies. You just like the idea of heist movies.
I do like the idea of heist movies. You know me. I like a logically constructed movie. And I did rewatch Ocean's 11 anticipating this podcast a while back. And I went in thinking, A, I like this movie. So B, I'm going to focus on what I find totally ridiculous about their heist. And I found actually an interesting takeaway in that the person writing this movie actually was kind of brilliant. Because when you're writing a heist movie, you got to balance all these various things. Like, you got to do the hand wavy, you got to make the heist, you know, make it dramatic for the audience, but also make it make sense. And I honestly think he pulled it off. The heist itself, yes, it requires a lot of massive luck and timing. What he didn't do is all of those guys, all of Ocean's 11, would literally be caught hours after that movie ends. They do nothing to try to hide their actions. A half-ass cop would get them immediately.
They're just hanging out at the Bellagio fountain afterward?
Well, yes, they're always seen together in public places under surveillance. They do, like, nothing to cover their tracks. So, yeah, they'd be caught immediately. But you as the audience don't really think about that because they're so professional. So I came in trying to hate on the movie, and I found myself appreciating it a little bit more, even for that. Can we give a little bit of props to Julia Roberts for breaking up with a thief who's going to prison and somehow landing a dream job and Andy Garcia in Vegas?
Well, she gives it up, though.
And then she gives it up! I was going to go right to a negative. Like, huge props, but then also, what the shit?
She could have Andy Garcia.
Yeah, so John, our chief complaint, I think I'll speak for Colleen, is that we didn't connect with the characters. They were cute, but we didn't really care about what they did.
You know, and here's probably the trick, is that I connected with the heist and like the overall plot. I really got into that because, you know me, I like schemes.
You do like
I like
schemes.
Launching
we know
schemes.
You're a schemer.
I like designing schemes. Mm-hmm.
You're Mr.
Scheme. I think you really do have to buy into like their gimmicks, their antics or shenanigans. Yeah.
I think this is why you really like the Fast and the Furious films, right? Is that
I do kind of enjoy those movies. Well, I like to say I hate watching them.
I like Fast and the Furious more than this movie.
I think that's crazy. but that's just me.
The last one I saw, there's like a helicopter, and they were like dragging a chain of cars off a helicopter.
I don't even remember one thing about Hobbs and Shaw other than it being awesome.
Remember, was that the one where they were speeding on the ice in their brightly colored sports cars?
I think that's a different one. So there's a lot.
Well, there's the one before that where they jump from one building to another building in Dubai. That one's pretty cool.
You know, I'm thinking of good heist movies. What I really do like is also a good villain like scheme, which is kind of a heist, but it's just the opposite way.
Sure. I mean,
there's not many good movies with that. And I feel like I'm approaching it the same sort of way. So yeah, I like well-constructed schemes. This is a well-constructed scheme. I don't hate anybody in this movie. I think Linus is wildly underpaid, the computer guy, because he did like 80% of the work on this scheme.
Yeah, but you always have to have Hermione in the group, you know?
You always have to have Hermione.
You gotta have someone to carry the load.
And they're not gonna call the book Hermione.
Which they damn well should have. She did all the freaking work. Holy crap.
I think it's, you know, sometimes white men just should get more credit
Harry's
just for being awesome.
You know, as a white man, I appreciate you saying that. So I'm going to give the movie a B+.
Wow.
And I feel extremely comfortable with that grade.
All right, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, I feel like in my bones, I almost want to give this movie a C just because it was so aggressively average to me. Mm-hmm. But
we
we
got to do our bit. Why is this the best movie ever?
Okay. Well, I do think all the acting was pretty good. I do like the pretty boys. I like the charmingness.
The acting was good. I mean, they didn't even act. They were just like, I'm just myself.
They were just being fun.
Oh, sure. I'll go down this elevator shaft.
Okay, Andy Garcia.
Okay. You got me there. You pulled out the Garcia card.
I thought Monica's dad did a pretty good job.
Three casinos. What he did that scene, yeah. He was shocked.
Michael, you make a good point. Many of the performances were quite dross, so
yeah. I think we're just making up. You gotta get a dictionary, I think.
Nah. I think it means bad.
Okay. Good reasons. Style. It's fun to have a movie with style.
Yeah, everyone had fun costumes, I felt
fun
like.
Fun costumes. I felt like the movie was slick.
Yeah, I think unlike you, I wasn't really that bored. I mean, the heist, the fun cuttings of the heist and how that was fun. When he's like, oh, shit, is there a Bellagio lettering on the floor of the vault in the video? And then they go to the video and there isn't because it's a fake video. What?
I'm not going to lie. I actually was a little bored.
All right.
So it's just me. It's my own personal thing.
It's fine. Yeah. So why is this the worst movie ever?
Boring.
Because of all the reasons we said.
Yeah. I just don't care about any of them.
Yeah.
I don't care if they succeeded or not.
So I think maybe why it was I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that we kind of live in a very content heavy era where like movies and TV shows are being made constantly. Maybe movies a little less over this past year, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of good films then become forgettable. Like nobody even like talks about Black Swan anymore or whatever, even though it was the best movie ever. Mm-hmm. But like Ocean's 11, because it was just in such a time, somehow lives on as something we all know. And it's like, does it deserve that? No, it's like so aggressively mediocre.
This is 2001. Okay. Shrek came out.
I know. And Shrek deserves.
Shrek deserves it.
Shrek deserves to be a shared media experience of a generation the way Ocean's 11 does not.
And you know what's so ironic? That's a human film. But he's an ogre.
Oh, the irony. How dross.
It's just such a dross film all around. I would give a 10 out of 10 dross, personally.
Don't ever look up what dross means.
I find the movie boring and uninteresting. So there you go.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a D+ because I liked the charming bits sometimes, and some of the heist bits were fun to watch, I thought.
Yeah, I'll go D+ as well. I like that grade because I don't want to see this movie again actively.
And you think? I mean, I kind of thought it was the kind of movie that if you're in a hotel room and it's on TBS, you watch it. But now I don't think that anymore.
No, because I would attribute that to action movies, right? So there's no plot, but it's like, oh, but the well-choreographed action is fun. So it's like, I feel like we need John's appreciation for heist, which I guess I don't have.
Yeah, I do like Fast and the Furious movie. You know what, though? I do hate those Fast and Furious movies where the heists go on too long. Like,
so there you go.
Because they don't make any sense anyway. So I just want to see some funny flashes. And then, like, that one Fast and Furious movie that ends with them chasing a plane on the runway, but it goes on for, like, 40 minutes. And it's like, no runway in the world is this long.
It's pretty great. Okay, so we did it.
Yes.
Who are we sponsored by?
This week we are sponsored by the Girl Scouts of America.
What do they do besides make cookies? So they make cookies for fundraising, and then they
to teach girls courage and leadership and wilderness skills,
like knives.
Yeah,
is that
knives.
A skill? Knives.
Sure.
So that's good. Got to teach our women knives.
Knives and sewing. I don't know.
and horses and singing
and capitalism,
because it's Girl Scouts,
right? Girl Scouts, but capitalism too,
right?
You're like, the Boy Scouts, get us fucking popcorn out of here, I want some delicious cookies. Girl Scouts of America. All right, what's our next film? I think we're gonna kick it to our fact finder, Samantha. What is our next film?
Can I get a spin of the dial?
Ding 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 ping.
It looks like it is Sex and the City the movie.
Oh my gosh, with our four lovely New York ladies.
You know, I have watched a lot of HBO stuff, including all the Sopranos, but every time I see that HBO, I hear the Sex and the City.
Probably because it's the first show, right? Your first HBO show.
Oh, probably, yes. Yes.
Yeah, because I think of, like, Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, yeah. That's a good show.
That was an HBO show. Not as good as this show. This show was great. So
great conversation.
Great conversation. Here, we'll just list all the shows. We will wait for next episode, so stay...
Entourage? Scott Kahn was in Entourage and this film, Ocean's 11.
Yes. So
join us next week and stay tuned for that trailer
and
cut.
Give me a kiss goodnight. It's the last single girl kiss.
The ultimate single gal, Carrie Bradshaw, will be married to John James Preston come fall.
Should we get you a diamond?
No, just get me a really big closet.
After years of living in the city, I assumed that if my friends and I ever got our fairy tale endings, that would be the end of the story.
Hello.
Welcome home, baby.
I always knew she'd marry big.
You thought that after the second breakup?
Yep.
After the 15th?
Uh-huh. We broke up a lot.
But real life?
200 people?
But don't you want...
I want you. That's what I want.
Always has a twist.
We've got a problem.
I got the call today. I didn't want to hear.
I can't believe I was running around New York thinking I'm finally getting my happy ending.
I let the wedding get bigger than big.
What are all these voices?
Have you ever been a personal assistant?
No.
Why'd you move to New York?
To fall in love. I've been
trying to get down. It didn't mean anything. It just happened once. But my will
gets weak. I'm pregnant.
Oh my God. No.
You know me.
I don't really believe in marriage. Now, Botox, on the other hand, that works every time.
I can't believe you're even dressing up.
The only two choices for women, witch and sexy kitten.
Oh, you just said a mouthful there, sister.
Honey, wax much?
When you're married, you have a different set of priorities.
This one's married and she's not growing a national forest.
Life doesn't always turn out to be your fantasy. That's why you need friendships that are real to get you through it all.
And
Cinderella and the prince lived happily ever after. You know, things don't always happen like this in real life. I just think you should know that now.